Welcome to the Fabric Podcast, where we're talking about what's at the core for Fabric as a movement and community, and hopefully inspiring you to wonder what's at your core, too. Here's Greg Meyer.
In our Fabric quest for a three-stranded weaving of life, one of the strands that we seek is our true self, that essence inside you that is who you truly are, not unchanging, but whole, gifted in your own ways, not perfect, but worthy of love, confident, yet humble, not fully formed, but learning and growing, even through the mistakes. I've often wondered if such a self exists within me, or if it was just wishful thinking that it did, until a wise woman, mentor, therapist, Karen Stevenson, showed me how I could know that it does. She asked me to recall those people in my life that when I am in their presence, I feel calm. I feel unconditional acceptance. I don't feel like I have to perform for them. I can just be. They're interested in me for my own sake, and they tend to draw out the best in me. Karen says that what we experience in those times is a glimpse of our true selves. I think she's right. It makes me confident that deep within me, or you, is not something corrupt or broken, but something whole and true, worthy of love that we can continue to touch and to key into. Since then, I have continued to seek those people who help me see my true self and find ways to spend time in their presence. I have also grown to believe that we don't have to just search and find those individuals out there in the world somewhere, but it is possible to create a community that develops and draws that side out of one another so that we can be the kind of people who help one another see and be their true selves. If I have one hope for Fabric, that would be it. To be a community that becomes an ever-expanding spiral of people who help others experience their true selves and in the process see their own self better. That's what this is all about. If you're interested in what is in the heart of Jesus, the gospel, the good news, that's it. To know you and I are loved. That we have nothing to prove, only to be our true selves. That is what is behind this core value that we are exploring today, share warmth. Last week I mentioned that while the first core values we talked about, choose connection, brave uncertainty, and think big, are essential to the life we want as a community, they're also daunting. We need to chill a little too, thus whimsify, which can refresh us and help us be creative, open, and just more human. But we don't just need change and rest, aspiration and fun, there's something else. We need love. We need to love and be loved. We need acceptance. We need places and people that feel like home, at least what home can feel like. That is how share warmth helps round out the constellation, the ecosystem of our core values, so that the whole is so much more powerful than the sum of the parts. I hope this list isn't a surprise to you, but it's a useful and helpful expression of what you have experienced from Fabric all along. If you don't know Fabric yet, I can't promise we will always live up to these, but I will say that they, in my eyes at least, are what we continue to see among us and what keep us going. We work hard at keeping them at our core, replacing all the other things that like to sneak in there and take over, making us less than what we could be. And that's what core values are all about and why they're not only important for us to talk about as an organization, but for you and me to think about as individuals. Everything you and I, or everything that Fabric does, the choices we make, the behaviors we allow to turn into habits, they come from somewhere. Somehow, at some time, something influenced us, and we let it become a filter of our experiences, helping us decide where to turn, what to pay attention to, what to do. Too often it happens unconsciously. It may be because of how you were raised, what society has made normative and saturated you with before you were aware to choose. There's so many ways we pick up the notions that end up at our core. And while they aren't all bad, by any means, when they aren't deliberate and we aren't conscious of them, they are unlikely to serve us well. And they will instead be confusing for us, competing among themselves within us. I bet that sounds a little familiar to you. It sure does to me. As sorted out and self-reflective as I would like to be, having my desired core values all figured out and at work within me will always be a bit out of reach. Maybe a long way out of reach. And that's okay. No one ever fully gets there. Or if they do, they don't stay there. The goal isn't perfection. Being aware of where you are right now and where you want to move next is what matters. Fabric is not a collection of people who have this all figured out, but who, at least in their best moments, are holding on to that vision for themselves and for each other. I remember long ago, we sent out a series of postcards to our neighbors, and each one was a rather tongue-in-cheek reason for checking us out. One of them said in big bold letters on the front, "Another reason to check out Fabric. We're all hypocrites." Then you flip it over and the back says, "At least we admit it and don't want to settle for it." Yep. So, Share Warmth joins arms with Choose Connection, Brave Uncertainty, Think Big, and Whimsify as core values for our community. I hope they're meaningful to you as part of our community, but I also want to ask you, what's at your core? What is making you tick? Do you know? Does what you want to be inside you match what comes out of you? Like I said, it's okay that it doesn't quite match. It never will perfectly. Keep asking yourself the question. We're all works under construction. Growth takes a long time and takes strange paths and doesn't always feel so good, but it is worth the journey. Okay, so that's core values. What about this one, share warmth? It speaks of things like welcome, seeing the neighbor, not the stranger, in others. It speaks of hospitality, giving rather than expecting. It moves us towards healing, filling, and believing in the surplus of self that we have to offer rather than the scarcity of stuff that we have to cling to. When I consider that aspect of share warmth, one of the first things that tweaks my conscience is this land that I'm so grateful to live in and love so much, and that I realize I have had the privilege of being part of at the expense of the welcome that was offered to this complex of my European ancestors over the centuries. I live and am speaking to you from Minneapolis, which is historically the land of the Dakota people. We could have received their welcome and made a home here with them and with the land, but instead we clung to a perspective of scarcity of the land and of our ways. The history is long and complicated and evades any single story, but our presence of these white ancestors has led to the destruction of the land and its inhabitants in so many ways. Our white ancestors did not live out share warmth very well. I will not try to solve that here, but it needs to be said. Belonging is important. How we express it to others, how we receive it, is important. Belonging is definitely a big part of share warmth. It's why we do it. To welcome someone is to let them know that they belong. A sense of belonging somewhere to someone is critical to our ability to trust and to develop healthfully. There was a movement in the church several decades ago called Alpha. I've got some theological bones to pick with it, but one thing that they got right was about belonging. They diagnosed something common in churches that is probably not unusual in our institutions, organizations, clubs, even our families in general. And that is that there is a progression of behave, to believe, to belong built into most of them. And they named it squirrely as being antithetical to what Jesus or the Bible in general stood for. What behave, believe, belong refers to is that to be welcome in many churches, you need to fit in already. That's how you behave, the way you live. Maybe socioeconomics, maybe politics, culture, ethnicity, accepted norms, they all need to match. If they don't, it's going to be pretty clear that this is not the place for you. No one even needs to say it to you. You get it. However, if you pass that behavior litmus test, the next then is belief. Despite the fact that most churches have a list of what we believe clearly posted on their website, this is actually secondary to the list of behaviors that you're expected to match. That's what's really important. So in the second step, the goal is to already believe what the church believes or get on board with it. And if you don't end up getting close enough to what everyone else believes, again, end of the line. This isn't the place for you. And by the way, it might be worth noting that Fabric does not have a list of what we believe on our website or anywhere. It isn't because we don't believe anything, but because it's not the right question. And there's no way to answer the wrong question and get a helpful answer. Anyway, if you want to know more about that, let's talk sometime. I'll buy the beer. So in this behave, believe, belong scenario, it's only now that you can really belong. You pass the first two steps. Welcome. You're one of us, or perhaps it should be, you are like us. So we'll take you. That's just wrong. It needs to be reversed. It should be belong, then believe, and at last behave. I agree with Alpha on that, although I've got a little different spin on it. Here's my take. First of all, you belong. No litmus test. Our common humanity is all we need to share. Like us, different from us. Got something to share. Got needs to be filled. It's not just all good, it's all valuable. We need each other. We are incomplete without each other. Now, because you feel welcome and safe and wanted, you might be interested in what motivates these people. What are they centered on that makes them look beyond themselves to include you? You become interested in what they believe. And by that, I don't mean their doctrine, because that's often just the facade, the checkboxes that people accept. It's what drives them, makes them the people that they are that is attractive to you. This believe is the movement that has swept them up and is carrying them away in something that is so countercultural. It's more a vision of the world and themselves than a list of faith statements or creeds. As you get the vision of that, and it begins to infect you, you will find yourself beginning to behave like them too. I don't mean looking like them, moving into the right neighborhood, or adopting their traditions, societal values, and norms, but living out the spirit of that community like it was shown to you. Because you were made to feel that you belong, you became curious about what these people believe, what they're driven by. And that made you want to behave, to act out that vision in your life as well. With Fabric, from the very beginning, we tried to make us a people who would welcome you by making you feel known and valued, almost like we were expecting you, even though no one ever knew you were coming. We want to share warmth with you. Some of it's practical, simple, tangible. I, along with others, insisted on serving good coffee from the very first week because, well, who wants a bad cup of coffee? Pandemic update. We aren't serving coffee on our podcasts, sorry, or when we're in person for the moment, but don't worry, we'll be back to that soon. Anyway, my hope is that, not because we are a slick organization, because we aren't, but because people in our community have been touched by the welcome of others, that when you or someone else shows up at one of our gatherings for the very first time, you'll be thinking, they know me, they understand me, they're ready for me. I hope in some way you even pick that up in our podcasts. Someone who both experienced that and has helped us live it out is Katie Shala Leshak. I asked her to talk with us about this. So here she is.
So I'm Katie Shala Leshak, and I was thinking about the first time I came to Fabric. Actually, I remember the first postcard I got. I don't remember exactly what it was, but it said, what if church was, again, I don't remember what it said, but it said something about coffee and snacks and childcare. Basically, the three things that I was interested in life at that point. So I decided that I was going to try going to this Fabric. Well, it wasn't called Fabric then, it was called Jacob's Well. And so I showed up, and of course, it's a little daunting because I don't know anyone there, but it was pretty close to home.
And you had had a different kind of experience growing up with church.
I did have a different kind of experience growing up with church. It was a very all-consuming experience, very intense. Our whole family's focus was church. Growing up and having gone to college kind of in that same type of Christian environment, I had come to the point where it really felt like this bubble I was living in, and that I didn't believe anymore that everything outside that bubble was not good and not okay and not godly and whatever. It felt too constricting what I had grown up with.
So you're looking for something different, and you showed up this first week.
I showed up this first week, and perhaps because of the way I grew up and our heavy focus on like witnessing to people and trying to get them to heaven, I came in expecting more of a car salesperson approach, maybe, or like something would be sold. And I literally came in ready to resist and protect myself. So it was this weird thing of wanting to come in, like looking for a connection, but being ready to push it away at the same time if it didn't feel right. So when I came, the person I remember connecting with was Stephanie. And she, I don't remember what she said, but I remember she showed me around with my 9-month-old kid, Sage, at that point, who's now 15, which is wild. So she showed me the childcare area and she showed me around. And I don't remember what started the conversation, but she must have asked something about like, well, what brings you here today or something. And instead of resisting her, I just felt like this openness. And all of a sudden I was sharing with her my entire life story of what I had grown up with, how hard it had been to come away from that and try to figure out my faith at this point in life. And she was like, yeah, there's a lot of people here like that who kind of grew up with one thing and maybe were hurt by it, or just it didn't feel right for them anymore. And so they're looking for creating something different in this community. Again, I don't remember what she said, but the feeling I got was A, we're not trying to sell you anything, and B, come as you are. I know that's kind of a cliche, but it's like how I am right now with all my doubts and not knowing, but kind of wanting some kind of connection. That's what was welcome there. And so anyhow, I ended up volunteering to work in the nursery the next week, and the rest is history.
Well, that's great. I mean, I think that kind of welcome, that openness is, it's certainly what we want to do. Anybody can say everyone is welcome.
Right.
But it's often quite clear that you're only welcome if you're going to fit our mold. So it's really up to people to embody that and to let people experience that. And we are glad you found a home and you've helped it be a home for so many other people. So that's how you experienced it when you first came, Katie. But I know from my own life that this welcome, the power of welcome, isn't something that we just experience on our first day or first couple of weeks or month or so. But the power of welcome is something that we continue to need to feel in the many stages of our lives.
When I was thinking about my time at Fabric with Sage in particular, well, not just with Sage. So my mothers-in-law were a part of my life, Thaddeus's moms. And it was really important to me early on, especially to know whether Fabric was a welcoming place for LGBTQ family, friends, people in general. You and I had a couple of conversations over the years about that. But then as my kid was growing up, you know, Sage started there at 9 months of age. And it became clear, you know, by 3 to 4, and then definitely into 5, 6, and 7, that Sage was a gender bending wonder. And I think being at Fabric is the place that I felt the most comfortable in my community, just having my kid be my kid and expressing themselves in the way that, you know, just really like seeing the joy and the beauty in how Sage expressed themselves. Yeah. So that was hugely important to me as a mom. And also, meanwhile, Maya and Heidi always have something amazing planned for the kids and the youth. And it's stuff that applies to real life and values that I share, and that, I mean, they can share those same values with Sage in a different way than I can, mm-hmm. in a more active way than I can. I understand my role as a parent, but having extra awesome adults in our close community who are actively reaching out and engaging my kid and developing their strengths and daring them to try something new and different, pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of the welcome, right? Do I belong here? Am I, so are my needs, are my family's needs, are they seen? Are they known? Or is there just an agenda for me?
Yeah. I mean, apart from having people welcoming me or trying to do that to other people as they come in, that's really critical, like that individual work. But the other thing I really have liked about being a part of Fabric is how explicit those values have been stated throughout. Even in the beginning, it was whatever, this all isn't set in stone.
Oh, nothing is written in stone.
Nothing is written in stone. And I've told you before about my favorite memory of one of your messages that you gave was you walking on a plank in between these two crates and kind of balancing across this wobbly plank, talking about being in the messy middle. And yeah. To me, that was just emblematic of how I liked the sense that being in the messy middle was an okay thing. And in fact, even a desirable thing, mm-hmm. that you're taking some risk and you're making space for questions and doubts. And then especially through group life, it's been really cool to be able to explore a lot of those questions and doubts on a small group level, because that's been tremendously meaningful to me to help process whatever at different stages in my life with raising Sage or relationships or work or just challenges of life that we're going through. I feel welcome. I feel like I can bring my full self. I feel like I can bring my full family. Even my husband, who may not describe himself as an atheist, but you know, he's definitely not, he wasn't raised in the church thing like I was. Like, I can bring Thaddeus to church. I can bring my mother-in-law to church. I can bring my kid, and we can all be on the days that they come or want to, but we can all come as our full selves. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it's explicit.
Yeah, that needs to be explicit. These messages of welcome, of belonging, of sharing warmth with one another, they can't be left up to guesswork. I think we need to know that that's who we are and how we're seen. So thank you, Katie. We appreciate your words and your presence in the community. One thing Katie is making clear is that when we share warmth, there is no such thing as a stranger. Valerie Kaur, in her book, See No Stranger, says it perfectly. She reminds us that the person you see and don't know is not a stranger, but an uncle, an auntie, a sister, a brother you haven't met yet. There is some part of, not apart from, theme here again. We're all connected. Jesus talked in terms of neighbor. A neighbor wasn't someone nearby versus someone who was far away or different. No, a neighbor was who everyone was. When he talked about strangers, it was to tell us to treat those we saw that way as neighbors, whom he told us to love as we love ourselves, right? And then there is the story of radical love that Jesus told, often referred to as the parable of the Good Samaritan. To be brief, it's about a man who's beat up, robbed, left on the side of the road for dead, and a couple of religious leaders pass by carefully and leave him alone. Then a Samaritan, a person from the other side of their divided culture, comes by and helps him. Jesus ends the story with this question for us. Who among those three proved to be a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of the robbers? Who among them saw himself as a neighbor to the one needing help, not a stranger? And perhaps the clearest mandate Jesus gave us about seeing everyone as belonging to us, worthy of sharing in who we are, what we possess, and the time that we have, culminates in this sentence. Whatever you have done to the least of these, my sisters and brothers, you have done to me. For Jesus, the least of these, the strangers, the unwelcome, the forgotten, the left behind, they are part of him. For us to not see them as part of us, belonging, welcome, deserving, is to be apart from him, from Jesus, unwoven from the fabric. Radical welcome, see no stranger, caring for the hurt and the lives of others, sharing in the hope that we have together, that is to share warmth. One mantra we repeat quite often with Fabric is that our community is made up mostly of people who aren't here yet. Keeping that in front of us helps us be outward facing. It's easy to start feeling that we, who are here now, are the group, and we will proceed from here, develop our own assumptions and understandings, providing no bridge, no access for others to follow, to find their way into our circle. I remember the very first gathering in March of 2006 of anyone who was interested in helping start this new thing that we didn't even have a name for yet. We got to this idea that we're talking about right now, and I asked everyone to close their eyes and imagine our community a year or two down the road. We had launched, gotten in the groove, and all was going great. And there we were, all standing together in a big circle holding hands. I asked everyone to picture that in their mind's eye. Picture it now in yours. Then I asked them to raise their hand while their eyes were still shut if they were picturing us all in that circle holding hands facing inwards towards one another. Every person raised their hand. I told them that I wanted them to change that image before they reopened their eyes. Yes, we were together in a circle holding hands, but I wanted us to picture ourselves facing outward, not inward. We will always be made up mostly of people who aren't here yet, and we will watch for them. We will reach out to them. We will go be with them. We will be ready for them. An outward-facing community, sharing warmth with the world we were part of, certainly with each other, but not only with each other. being a community of people who mostly aren't here yet means giving some things up, doesn't it? It means we don't get to form the club, march off together. No, we do more than just leave a trail, too. We stand at the door and we wait. We go out into the world to know our aunties and uncles that we haven't met yet so that we understand who they are and can be part of their lives before they're ever part of our community, even if they don't ever become a part of our community. We grow and we are tempted to move on, but we keep the path from where each of us were when we arrived to where we are now, clear and open. If that was true for you and was what made this community a welcoming, inviting, safe place for you when you first came, then we can't let the door shut after you came through it. No, we want it held wide open for the next person who is the new you. So, yeah, it means putting up with things that you got past a long time ago because we care about the person who hasn't. You've put up with me explaining what a gospel is, who Paul was, over and over again. We stay in this awkward uncomfortableness with how to talk about God, the third strand, Yahweh, I am who I am, over and over again. You know it all now, but you didn't, maybe, when you first came. And there's someone else here today who doesn't. Or maybe they've just got a lot of baggage around all this God, Jesus, Bible, church stuff, and they're conditioned to think we mean something we don't. Yeah, there's a lot of that out there. Or you hear someone point out where the bathroom and the coffee and the tea are. Talk about important. I mean, hey, gotta do that. Because someone doesn't know. And you have to put up with that again. Sorry. But it's what we do when we love our neighbor as ourselves. It's why we have a 3-minute rule. It's a concrete way that we remember to share warmth. What's the 3-minute rule? Well, I'm glad you asked. It gives me another chance to plug it. I love this one. It's very simple. For the first 3 minutes, when our gathering ends, don't talk to anyone you already know. Go find someone you don't know, or at least don't know well, and talk to them. Don't worry if they're new or not. Just go say hi. Introduce yourself. Why? A couple of reasons. First, it's a great way to get to know more people so we're more of a community. You've got no idea who is around here all the time with so much in common with you, and you have never known it. Go talk to people. Second, because new people will be gone within 3 minutes. Face it, if you're a new person at a gathering and say you love it and you feel so at home, when it ends and the structure of the gathering is over, it gets weird really fast. What do I do now? New people head for the door instantly. If someone doesn't say hi and show some interest in them, maybe share their own story right away, they're gone. And they're leaving feeling disconnected, not connected. Strangers. Third, your friends, the ones you're glad to see on Sunday, the ones you can't wait to talk to, they're going to be there anyway. They want to talk to you too. And besides, they're practicing the 3-minute rule too, so they can't talk to you for the first 3 minutes. Now, is that all contrived? Maybe, but sometimes we need practices to help us know how to live out what's in our hearts. Reminders that keep us from doing what comes automatically so that we can do what is most important to us. I realize that all this is hard to apply to a podcast or a community that isn't meeting in person, but that's all temporary, right? I mean, we will be back together soon. And you may be geographically in some other part of the country and can't gather with us, and you say, well, this is all irrelevant to me, and no, it's not. I mean, this is perfect for Fabric, but like most things, the fact that it's good for us means it's basically good for people. It's good for situations you're in too. A family gathering, a block party, or an office get-together. Now, if you want some homework to practice this coming week, I like to dish that out, try applying this 3-minute rule to the different places that you show up. Notice a stranger wherever you go and make them a neighbor. Then, go find your old neighbors and they'll be waiting for you. They want to see you too. Share warmth. See no stranger. Serve up joy. Create belonging. If you think about the ancient Hebrew people at all, which I'm sure you don't, but stick with me anyway for a minute, you probably carry an image of them in Egypt as slaves and then heading out into the wilderness as a nation already that's making this trip together. Thousands of people making their way as an intact group to their homeland. While historical records are obviously fuzzy about all this, what we can glean from records of that era suggests that what was really happening was that whoever these people fleeing Egypt were among the many disenfranchised nomadic people who were now being squeezed out by the rising nation-states appearing in the Middle East, the Syrians, the Babylonians, the Egyptians, and more. Gradually, these people who no longer had a place, can we call them strangers? They began banding together. Records from these powerful nations talk about the Hapiru who were doing just that. Hapiru, most biblical, historical, and archaeological scholars believe, were the Hebrew people. They weren't a nation that moved intact from one location to another, but many, many nomadic, homeless, disenfranchised people who are being made strangers, sojourners in their own lands, together finding themselves to be neighbors, banding together and becoming a people who had at their core the command, "You shall love the stranger, for once you were strangers in the land of Egypt," and who followed a God they knew as "I am who I am," who, as the book of Psalms sings, watches over the strangers, who upholds the orphan and the widow. That's something our world, our own country, could use a little bit more of, something we can practice as a community, not because we're supposed to, but because it is how fabric is woven, tightly, inseparably, a tapestry of variety, complexity, and beauty, shared warmth. Sharing warmth is an antidote to the conflict, the tension and polarization that we have in our world today. Us versus them ends up in win-lose every time, if it gets anywhere, only to be turned back into lose-win as soon as possible. Arguments solidify isolated positions. They don't unify diverse visions. We're cold towards each other, and we need to thaw it. Sharing warmth can do that. An act of kindness, the recognition of another person as your uncle whom you have not met yet rather than as a stranger. Welcome despite what you do not know yet and may never understand. A smile letting the one who thinks they are your enemy know that they belong here too. A good cup of hot coffee. All that warms hearts. Our oneness, our unity, our being part of one another instead of apart from one another will never come from demanding conformity of ideas, beliefs, practices, but from our acknowledged common humanity, our willingness to listen to each other's stories, not just our positions. Shared warmth can heal what divides us. To tend to those holes in our world and in our lives can require forgiveness. Not forgiveness that lets someone off the hook, leaves injustice unchecked, or makes you the doormat of someone else's abuse, but that heals your own heart so that you can be free. Free to love, not held captive. Free to be whole, regardless of the remorse or repentance of the other person. So that your unfrozen heart is able to thaw the heart of someone else, who will then know that they, like you, are worthy of love, and they can become a neighbor, not a stranger. Sharing warmth is a key to our community, a core value, and it's a lot of fun. Who doesn't like a smile from someone they don't know yet and a good cup of coffee? Take it away, Chris.
You are whole. We've all felt some hard times. We've all found ourselves on hard trails. Those hard times and hard trails have brought us all right here and now. If you're here, you are.
Your home, right here, right now. It's at our core. So, what's at your core? What are the non-negotiables for you? Even though you know they're hard and complicated, and even though you don't always know how to apply them, you know you can't live without them. I hope these core values that we've been sharing, choose connection, brave uncertainty, think big, whimsify, and share warmth, I hope they resonate with you. But your own list is likely different. They probably should be. My personal ones are, even though I share these in my relationship with Fabric. If you haven't thought much about your own, it's time to consider them. Or if you think your ideals are your core values, careful and check to make sure they really are. Ideals tend to be something we admire from a distance, but don't live out up close. We like the idea of them, but strangely, not enough to practice them. Find the core value version of your ideals. And don't worry if your core values are confusing and hard to get a handle on. What did you expect? This is lifetime long-haul stuff, folks. And don't worry that your core values don't sound sexy or terribly lofty. They don't need to impress anyone. They just need to help you figure out where your heart wants to go. And don't worry if you don't always live up to them. None of us do. But we can tell it when we do. And we know we feel more alive, more whole, and truer to ourselves when we do. The excitement of those times, they're going to keep you coming back for more. Finally, don't worry that your core values seem to shift or change over time. They, like you, are evolving. As you get closer to where you thought the horizon was, you are now in a spot to see a still further horizon. That's a good thing. Frustrating maybe, but it's good. So choose what belongs at your core. Try it out. Share the ideas and your struggles with it with people you know and trust. Your group, as Katie talked about it, is a perfect place. What is at your core values, just like Fabric's, hinge on the simple idea that you matter and that what you do matters. That doesn't mean you have to save the world. You don't have to be a hero at all, but you can be yourself. And the longer you live with what is most important to you at your core, the more your true self will be the one you and the world will know.
Thanks for listening. We hope this podcast sparks conversation in other parts of your life. If you're looking for meaningful connections, there's a Fabric group for you to try, whether you're in the Twin Cities or not. Tag at FabricMPLS with your wanderings on social media and find resources on our website, fabricmpls.com.